Welcome to Random Gaming Talk. It's Entertainment Talk's podcast for video games. I'm your host, Matthew. Joining me today, my co-host is Roberts. How's it going?
It's going good. How's it going for you?
Going pretty good. Going good. Just for anybody wondering about my cough, by the way, I did buy some new stuff for it today. And just before we started recording, I took a tablet for it. So hopefully that makes that better. What I used before did work quite well. You remember when I had that cough in like December, because it was when we were trying to wrap up all the big Christmas content. Well, not Christmas, but like all the end of the year stuff. And I remember being like a bit nervous that we wouldn't even get, you know, like the big end of year stuff. It's not come back in that same way, but it's similar. So I thought I'd try and kill that off. But anyway, video games, what have you been playing?
Mostly just Dragon Quest III. There really hasn't been a whole lot coming out. A couple of side scrollers, which I'm a big fan of, are coming out soon, but nothing really
Which ones are those?
big to talk about. There's a Shinobi one, and it's basically like the old school like NES Ninja Gaiden, but obviously modern, so it's not brutally hard. Although that game is brutally hard. Just because of, graphics and programming limitations to where you move a little bit and then go back a little bit and it respawns enemies, that kind of thing. That's part of what makes that game brutally hard. But, kind of in that same vein, no demos for those out yet, but I'm keeping an eye out on them.
Cool. For me, Expedition 33, of course, I'll continue playing that. It might sound strange, but I think I finished the game. And what I mean by think I finished the game is I did what is again, it's difficult to kind of talk about because I don't want to mention names of characters who I'm fighting because I think that those are spoilers. They kind of are spoilers. The boss fight that I was landed at last time, because I think I remember last time saying like I'm outside this boss's door, essentially, like ready to fight it. I beat that one. That was a two-stage mix of a fight. That was very interesting. I've now beaten the big boss after that, who I think is actually the final boss of the game. The only reason I haven't finished the game yet is I have actually, like, the actual you've finished this screen victory, I've got that screen up, so I've done the two stage. Because you always know with the game that okay, if you beat a boss but don't quite die, and then you get a cutscene, you're getting probably a second phase. I think there was one boss that had three phases, actually, if I remember correctly. But yeah, I've done that part of the screen, let's call it, and it's come up with the victory thing. But I just haven't watched the final cutscene yet, so I've got it like paused there. Obviously, my PlayStation's not on right now. I've basically got it paused, and I've put my PS5 into rest mode. So I think I just need to watch the. I mean, I wasn't going to review it today anyway, because it's definitely going to be a game I'm going to need to, absorb and think about, and maybe watch some stuff on or whatever. Like absorb it a bit more, because there's a lot there to dig into and break down. And then maybe a couple of days' time or something. Do a review. We'll see about that. But yeah, basically got it paused on what I think is the final cutscene. There might be one more boss, but I don't think that there is. That's good. The I m made like a slight mistake. So I ended up putting it on easy at the end, because not because I was like bad at the game, but there were certain parries I just wasn't quite getting. And it's fine to switch from middle to, well, basically middle to story. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not cheating. It's just a
I've done
difficulty.
it.
It's just a difficulty setting. I know there's some people out there that like look down on people that do that. I'm like, oh, why couldn't you do it on normal? And but it's not. Beating the game is beating the game at the end of the day. Still did struggle in a couple of fights even on easy. So that goes to show. So in what again I think is the last boss fight, my team got killed. I think I'd done this was in the first phase of it, and this was like a couple of hours ago. I've literally kind of like like pause that to come and do this, essentially. And so my entire team got killed. It was simply a case of like, enemies doing new moves. I don't know the timings yet because I don't know what the enemy's going to do. And thus my team got killed. Brought in the reserve team, which is usually the two characters who I'd been leveling up, but I'll admit I sort of like slacked on that slightly. And what ended up happening, and it's fine that this happened, both the characters kind of had attacks where it was like, hey, if you attack this, it will heal this percent of that one character or both of them. So even in the attacks where I got slaughtered a little bit, I could, as long as I was like keeping the two characters alive, although for a long time I was just keeping one of the characters alive. And because they're, I don't think I checked their like Pictos and all that sort of stuff, so they were quite underleveled. And it took me 52 minutes. At least that's what the timer, when it comes up the timer at the end, it says how long it took you. Although I don't know how accurate that stuff is. It felt like it took that long though. And it was essentially a case of like, okay, now as long as this boss doesn't do anything different, like new timings and stuff, which in the second phase, they had this one like in the middle of the second phase attack where it was just this big like cinematic one. But then once they got past that, they kept doing the same attack, still got caught out now and again, you sort of miss something or whatever. And I was like, right, as long as I can keep healing both of them, there's no need for me to restart, although you can't actually restart the fight, you have to die. As long as I can keep these two characters alive and just keep picking off this enemy's health. And there was a couple of attacks where I got like, the 9,000, and that was helping to chip more away. But the main goal ended up being, okay, I've got this far. I don't want to like, just deliberately die and restart to get everybody back. I'll just slowly pick this enemy's health down, keep making sure I'm getting the timings right, which I miss now and again. Just keep healing the characters, keep them alive, and eventually I did get through it. It was a couple of times I accidentally got the second character killed because when I use the revive, it does like, 20% or whatever it is, and I got caught out with a couple of things. But yeah, I made it through it. Made it through it, and again, I think that's the final boss fight because I don't know what else, what or who else you would actually fight after this. But yeah, I think I've just got to watch the last cutscene, which I'll do that at some point,
Yeah, I
and then review the
actually
game.
did see the video you uploaded to YouTube on the Entertainment Talk Plays channel, where it's got the last 30 minutes of that fight. I can definitely say three things definitively. One, you're not spending enough time in camp because
Those two
at
char
least
with those two characters, I hadn't like completely paid attention with like properly sorting out their stuff. That's probably why you were seeing that. So.
Well, no, it's not so much that. It's just that just simply being in camp and having Verso talk to the other characters and continue down that storyline, you unlock more gradient attacks. And on your CL character, you only have one gradient attack unlocked. So you need to do more of the story to get the gradient attacks unlocked to get to the bigger stuff. You definitely aren't doing anything with the Pictos because for that fight, you should not be doing 2,000-3,000 damage. You should be doing 40,000-60,000 damage at a bare minimum, even on easy mode. So you're probably not upgrading the weapons. You're, not
With those two, I wasn't,
min-maxing
yeah.
the. Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. You're just making the game harder than it needs to be. Now, granted, some people take that to the extreme, like with the optional boss fights. I've seen people min-max to where they're doing 51 million damage on an attack,
Jesus. Wow.
but they're doing that on bosses that have 125 million hit points.
See, it was a simply a case where, like, because I focused on the other three much more. I don't know if
Oh,
those
yeah.
three are in the 30 minutes. I think because they died quite near the start, so
No, they're
I
not.
don't think you saw them in the fight. Because then you might have seen some different stuff. What was I gonna say? So it was simply a case of like, okay, I've got this far in the fight. Like, I don't really want to restart it. So just keep picking away at the health and keep healing, just to kind of like keep it going. So, I did do. I pretty sure I did. Because you have like where you play as Verso, and you like talk to each character. I did do all that stuff.
There's several. several stages. I think the max friendship rating is 7. It goes
Okay.
6 and then
I'm not sure what
max.
mine was on, so yeah.
Couldn't have been any more than 4 because 4 is when you get the second gradient attack.
Yeah.
And you got to do it repeatedly in camp over and over again.
Yeah. So, do you know if that's actually the, because you finished, do you know if that's the
You
last one?
are 99.9% done. You have what I call the emotional damage choice to make. So you're going to get some story, and then you're going to get a choice. And your choice is going to be between emotional damage and more emotional damage.
Yeah.
And I could describe them with movies,
Is that an actual
but
boss
that would
fight, though?
completely. Yeah, it's. I'm technically no, but kinda. But I can't describe what movies they are because that would spoil the ending.
Okay.
And that's no bueno.
Yeah. Okay, cool. At least if I do, because I think when you finish a fight, you go back to having everybody alive after, don't you? I think. So, yeah, should be fine. Although I think both of them were healed at the start anyway. So, at the end, rather. Anyway, it's Expedition 33 at the moment. That is basically the only thing I've been playing. So, and then after I, because like you said, I'm basically nearly done with that. Yeah, hopefully, I haven't been sent anything yet. Death Stranding seems to be on a very, very long wait with the service I have called Boomerang.
I'm assuming Death Stranding too.
I mean, I know it's a long game and a lot of people probably playing it, so, but I could be sent it, tomorrow. It just depends on, it doesn't tell you where you are in the queue, but essentially you open up a rental space, and it's like, okay, you're then number 5, but you don't know. It just says short, medium, or long wait, so you're like number 5. So if they then get 5 Death Stranding 2s returned to them, they're sending them to the next people in the queue, basically. So, although I had to re-queue for that because I got sent Mafia as well. So, yeah. What was I going to say? Anyway, yeah, that's what we've been playing recently. Let's do some housekeeping and then we'll get into news. But let's do some housekeeping first. See you for that in just a minute. Hi there. If you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link, which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system, which is usually in the bottom right hand corner, to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there. If you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcasts that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show. There we go. Right, recently on Entertainment Talk, of course, there's the United cast, which is back. The second out of 38 Premier League games has been played, and we drew 1-1 against Fulham. Doesn't sound terrible, but it was genuinely one of the worst performances we've had under this manager. Fulham, after the first 10 minutes, completely outplayed us, figured us out within the first 10 minutes, and of course, with our manager, he doesn't change what he does. It was funny because after the game, the Fulham players came out and they do like the post-game interviews and that, and said, like, hey, we noticed Man United left a lot of space in the middle, so we took our wide players and pushed them in towards the middle, and they didn't change it. We didn't, like, change that, so they figured it out really easily. Anyway, we played Grimsby, is it Grimsby? Yeah, Grimsby tomorrow in the Carabao Cup, which you'd assume we'd win, but again, if Grimsby can figure out the same thing and our manager doesn't change it, then we'll see what happens with that. So that will be in a different competition, and then we also have Burnley on Saturday, and we'll see what happens in those two games. Over on Gaming Talk last week, a game that we'll be talking about again this week, Lego Batman was revealed. Of course, we had the whole Gamescom stuff, so we talked about that. I talked about my kind of impressions on what we've seen so far of Resident Evil 9, so we talked about that. And I talked about what are they called, Double Fine's new upcoming game called Keeper as well. We talked a bit about some footage from that, as well as what we've been playing and all that sort of stuff. Over on Political Talk, of course, talked about the hot topic in the UK at the moment, which is to do with asylum seekers and hotels, and everybody's moaning about it, but nobody's doing anything about it. And then there's lots and lots of other layers towards that conversation, so talked about all of that. Of course, talked about the Palestine situation, which is sort of connected to that in a certain way, and then talked about free speech as well, regarding Lucy, what's her name again, Connell, who just got released from prison as well. Over on some TV talk stuff, I did a single spoiler podcast for The Handmaid's Tale, focusing specifically on the series finale, which I finished the show up to season 6, episode 10. Had some thoughts on that, had an interesting ending. It's got a sequel series coming up, which is going to have like a different cast, and they set that up in the show. They left certain things open for that show, but then wrapped up other things, so I talked all about that. Of course, spoiler talk, so it's got spoilers in it. So talked about that with The Handmaid's Tale. Over on the United Cast, scores for the first game of the Premier League season, we lost 1-0 against Arsenal at home. So that was the first game that was last weekend. Over on Gaming Talk, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about Battlefield 6 in the limited capacity that we have. And just in case any of you are wondering, I've not heard back yet from EA. What was the last thing I said on that? Which was that I got the follow-up support ticket email saying that they've got the email, which was 4 days later. I can't remember if I mentioned it in between podcasts, but I got an email, I think it was 2 days after that. I think it might have been after last week's podcast, because I think I mentioned I sent the first email off, then like 4 days later they sent me the email saying, we've got your ticket, speak to you soon kind of thing. And then I think it was 2 or 3 days after that, which I think was after last week's podcast, I got another email saying, you know, like the feedback, like how did we do sort of thing, which is ironic because they've done nothing so far. So,
it's auto-generated. So.
Yeah. So I got that one next. It was like, can you give us a star rating? I was like, I don't think you want me to do that. Anyway, talked about Battlefield 6 with that, talked about some Naughty Dog stuff and Hell Is Us as well. Over on some film reviews, I did a must-see review for Fantastic Four First Steps, which I quite enjoyed. There's also a rumour, by the way, it's the 27th tomorrow. I think I mentioned this last time. There's supposed to be Chair Stream Part 2 with more cast names. I don't know if that's true or if that will happen, so don't, you know, bet on it or whatever. But that was just an interesting piece of information that I heard, that Chair Casting Part 2 could be on the 27th. But if it's not, then don't blame me. Over on the Breaking Bad podcast, with the Refreshed podcast, we've put out Season 3, Episode 13. I'm going to message David soon and possibly either next week or definitely the week after, we will try and start season 4 for that, because I know that's been a long time waiting for that. Just a big thank you to people who've listened to those, by the way, because those aren't like new podcasts, those are just refreshed ones. And there was more people listening to them than what I expected, so thank you to everybody who supported those. It makes it felt like it was, you know, worth the effort putting them back up and all that sort of thing. So there's that. And then what else have we got? Yeah, that's pretty much what we've been doing recently on entertainmenttalk.org and on podcast platforms. Let's move in some news. Should we go first? I guess I'll just read my list. That would be the best thing to do, right? So we got a bit of information, a bit of update from Bungie. Of course, we've talked about them a few times. They've not been in a great place for a bit. Of course, I've also talked about the whole thing with Last of Us Online and how Bungie gave them like a second opinion and all that sort of thing came and went. That was like a couple of years ago. Obviously, Sony bought them for, what was it, like $8 billion, which I think is quite wildly overpriced. It says here Bungie CEO Pete Parsons has announced that he has left the studio behind series like Halo and Destiny after 10 years in the position. He'll be replaced by Justin Truman, who was previously Bungie's chief development officer and will now be studio head. Of course, they keep supporting, I think the newest thing they are doing is still supporting Destiny in some way. Of course, they got Marathon coming up, which has not landed well so far yet. Of course, it's still early days for that, but it does just look like another, first person sci-fi shooter, which, like we said with Splitgate 2, there's just too many of those games at the moment, considering they are also a studio that still makes, because it would then be their third series of first person shooter sci-fi games. I know Halo's obviously a bit different and far more iconic, which they're not in charge of anymore, because that's 343, or Halo Studios, which I think they got renamed to. And we'll see what they come up with for Halo. But yeah, basically moves from, Halo to Destiny and now on to Marathon. But yeah, that's what they're doing at the moment. But yeah, we've heard and seen in what the last couple of years, pretty much since Sony bought Bungie for the $8 billion, which again, quite wildly overpriced. There's certainly talent at that studio, but it's just not landing at the moment for whatever, particular reason. Now, you could look at a story like this, and you hear about people leaving your studios all the time. Sometimes it's just people have worked there a long time, they're going to retire or move. It didn't say specifically retiring here, so I didn't put that down. But I suppose, if you're working, because you could either consider this as like, oh, that's them being in trouble and they felt the need to, jump the ship sort of thing, which sometimes you'll never know what the true answer is. And then it could be, okay, this other guy, this Justin guy, was the chief development officer, so maybe it was just always going to be a way that they were just next in line naturally, maybe. Again, we'll never quite know unless someone's NDA breaks in 5 years or something, whether this was Bungie's doing badly, he's jumping ship, or just he was going to leave in and around this point. Maybe, before Marathon comes out, and then this guy's going to be studio head for Marathon's phase, however long that phase actually lasts. There doesn't seem to be really any buzz particularly around that game. Because even with the small bits of that game that I saw, it didn't look specifically bad. It just didn't sort of, like when you have these big studios, it's like, oh, Destiny and especially Halo, you leave a big mark in the industry, and then you come out with something like that, and it just looks a bit meh compared to the things that have come before. So I guess we'll see how this guy does and see, when Marathon actually probably comes out, how it's perceived, what goes on there, and then see what the next stage is at. But what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that Bungie really has been on the downslide for a while. While I'm not in the community, I know that Destiny 2 has been dropping players like crazy over their expansions. They're just not interesting people. They've had a like one big expansion hit, and the rest of them have just completely flopped. Obviously, with Marathon, all the stolen art for literally everything
Oh yeah,
visually on the game did not help at all. I was actually under the impression that the actual studio got absorbed into Sony, and it wasn't going to be Bungie anymore. But I guess that I either misread that article or that just hasn't happened yet.
Who knows? Who knows? See, I look at, okay, so this is like, what's next for them? Is this guy to take over, them to try to do launch Marathon and get excitement around it and that sort of thing, and not to keep beating a dead horse, but if someone was to make a hypothetical bet and say, right, let's say you're going to move on from Destiny, because they've been doing Destiny for a long time, don't forget there's been two Destiny games and all the DLC, and it's good to support your games and stuff, but maybe they'll move on from that. Now, if they, let's say, hadn't done Marathon or aren't doing Marathon, and we don't know specifically how good or bad that game is going to be when it comes out, because there's still going to be time between now and then, and it hasn't gone well so far, but it's still early enough to where, like, you still can do a good job with that. It just depends on what exactly you do. But because you've got two different scenarios, which is like, okay, obviously Naughty Dog would have been reliable to do Last of Us Online because it's their thing and it's been successful and they would know what to do. But then there was the whole problem with, turning then Naughty Dog into live service studio, which is not a good idea. Not because they would be bad at it, but because it would peel away from their narrative story games, which they're known and loved for. But it's then like, okay, if you want to have someone there oversee that, and obviously none of this is going to happen, I'm just being hypothetical. It's kind of what we're here to do. And they go, right, we'll make the game, we'll put like the base stuff in for it, and then hand it off to Bungie. What would have been, I mean, the more commercially reliable thing to do would be have Bungie do Last of Us Online, because obviously Last of Us is a much bigger IP than Marathon, which is a completely unknown quantity. It's just a fact of whether Bungie was going to be doing Last of Us Online or Marathon, which one would they be better at doing? Because then you could get into a situation where, like, if Bungie's got better ideas because they know, the first person shooter thing as opposed to a third person action stealth apocalyptic game, which is a completely different, genre. Not saying that companies can't do different things, they can, but I kind of look at this now, and obviously the actual answer will be they'll come forward with Marathon and do whatever they can do. If it falls flat on its face, obviously they'll just, have to do a Concord and move on to somebody else. Not saying it's going to be as bad as Concord, but whatever. But like, the more commercially safe thing to do would have been to do Last of Us Online, but then I wonder, like, if you're looking at Bungie and their sort of identity and their talent, would they themselves, let's say they do season one of either Marathon or Last of Us Online, because you've got two totally different content ideas, you would trust them more to do like new ideas for Marathon season one because they would know that genre better. But that's going to be their next thing, I suppose, trying to figure out like what exactly they're doing with that. It could even be a case where, let's say, we don't hear about Marathon for, I don't know, 2 years or something, and then it gets quietly cancelled, because things like that can obviously happen. But then it's a case of, okay, another 3 to 5 years, let's see what you can make. Oh, the PS6 is out, and then whatever. So yeah, what do you think in terms of, like, obviously Last of Us Online is not the option. I was just talking about hypothetical stuff, but how do you think this might go in terms of Marathon next, and how long that could go for, and that kind of thing?
To be honest, I don't even see Marathon coming out. And you're talking about Concord. At least Concord released. I mean, yeah, it was only out for 5 minutes, but it was out. With Marathon, so much of that artwork is iconically tied to the game. To completely reskin everything would take at least 2 years. And at this point, I mean, already they're at the point to where they're throwing good money after bad. And you talked about a Last of Us. I mean, just not even counting the IP, you're talking about a different way for the graphics engine to process everything, because there's no, super jumps 90 feet in the tall in the air. There's no plasma rifles or anything like that. Just the mechanical setup of it would be completely different. So it's not like they could easily transition. This would not like be going from Last of Us to, say, Uncharted Online, because I think didn't they do an Uncharted Online for one
Yeah,
of
there
them?
was parts of 4 that had it, I think. Yeah,
Yeah,
Uncharted 4. Yeah.
because at least that would obey the same laws of physics. It probably wouldn't
Right, the
work as well
grounded
either,
stuff. Yeah,
but
yeah.
yeah, it'd be a lot more grounded. But yeah, I mean, this is me totally speculating, but I honestly don't see that game coming out at all. And if it does, minimum 2.5, 3 years. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But, you know, that's just me being old and seeing the trends and patterns.
No, I agree. I almost wonder, like, again, we don't know how much money's been poured into it, but when you're at like a, I don't know if crossroads is the right word, but like, I suppose, okay, do you pour another 50 to 100 or however many million it would be into this game for it to maybe not work, or do you ditch it like now and then spend the next, again, 3 to 5 years, because that's how long games take to make for some reason now, to make something new? But then, okay, what is that? What, like, so I'd like to think each studio has got sort of, okay, we're working on this. This is going to take so many years. What are the, like, if you do have more than one game in development, what are those going to be? What do those look like? What assets do we need? That kind of thing. I'd be curious to see, like, the other ideas they possibly would have in the pipeline. And not, obviously, it couldn't be Halo because that's in a completely different thing. But like, do they have any more Destiny 2 idea? Would you do a Destiny 3? What would that look like? So they've got some options to play around with, maybe. But like, is Marathon a good one for that? So, and again, I just, as somebody who's been in the first person multiplayer, ecosystem, let's call it, for a while, I just think releasing another sci-fi first person shooter, that's just, to me personally anyway, that's just boring almost. Like, we have so many of them, and we haven't even had, much from one of the main ones itself in Halo for a while. So I'll see what they do, but it'll be up to a new studio head called Justin Truman, which reminds me of the Truman Show. Pretty good film. Did that as a classic reviews. Very good. I'm assuming you've seen that film.
Very good film.
Yeah. Quite just an interesting idea. Let's move on from that to a game series I admittedly haven't paid much attention to, but I just found this story to be interesting because it's somewhat similar but different. It says BioShock 4 developer Cloud Chamber is laying off an unspecified number of staff. Also, former Diablo boss Rod Ferguson is taking over as Cloud Chamber's new studio head. More than a decade ago, he joined the troubled BioShock Infinite, which was the recent game, I think the fourth game in the series. I think there's BioShock 1, 2, 3. And Infinite, I
Infinite.
think Infinite is 4, yeah. So, there might be some odd PSP games out there, but I think those are the main bunch. But yeah, he joined the troubled BioShock Infinite and helped salvage that game's production. Take-Two guts BioShock Studio after a decade of development. Yeah, again, whether this will be a game I play, I obviously haven't seen a single screenshot or anything of it, so I don't know. BioShock has always kind of been one of it's a series that has annoyed me in a way, because a lot of people who not necessarily play the same games of me, but people whose opinions I trust and value, have often said like how big of a benchmark that is for, video games and stories, and I can recognize and understand why. I just could never click with those games. I tried the like remastered things when they came to like PS4 a few years ago. I did try Infinite. Heck, I remember when I saw Infinite's, this was probably in the 360 days, I think. Yeah, the 360 PS4. When you saw like the first trailer for BioShock Infinite, obviously this was way before I was doing podcasts, and I always remember like the skyline rails and like jumping off and grabbing onto those, and that always looked like really, really cool. And I always thought how, like, even just, whether the rest of the game's any good, that would be cool in and of itself to do. But just never really click with those. But because depending on what you do with this, because I don't know what the canon is, if this is going to be, sequel, revival, reboot, prequel, it could be anything. And obviously they're having to figure all this out because this game's been in development hell for a bit of time. I would like to play a BioShock game that clicks with me. I'm almost kind of sitting here right now thinking, like, should I try again? But I don't know. It might be, because that might be one as well that's like, would it be worth, like, rather than playing it, watch the cutscenes? But then I think like Netflix is doing something for it. Should I watch that? Because I am curious to see more about it and all that kind of stuff. It's just like, as a video game, it didn't click with me. I think I like streamed some bits and pieces of it a few years ago of, I don't think it was Infinite. I think it was one of the, probably the first game, because you would obviously start with the first game. And it just, yeah, it had some interesting ideas, but it just never clicked with me as a as a video game. But like I've heard Colin Moriarty over on Sacred Symbols talk about it a bunch. I think I've heard John Piano, who was the production designer on Last of Us, because me and David talked to him. Was that 2 years ago? Oh my god, yeah, it was after season one. Because David asked him like a production question about like, hey, what else would you like to work on? And he said BioShock looks kind of interesting. So he kind of held that in high regard. And then I think, what was it? I think it was when I was watching Neil Druckmann talk to Alex Garland when they did the creator to creator thing on Sony's channel, and they were talking about like games that have influenced stuff. And I remember there was three games that Neil brought up, which was the Monkey Island stuff, Eco, which was kind of where some of the companion DNA comes from Naughty Dog's games, and he also mentioned BioShock as well. None of those games I've played. I'm very, very interested in playing Eco, by the way, but there's not like it's not very accessible to play because I would have to subscribe to the Plus Tier 2 thing and then stream the PS3 version of the game or something. So yeah, but Eco is a game I've been interested in for a bit. So yeah. Anyway, I'm curious to see what this ends up being. I've kind of got like half an eye on it, if it makes sense, because I would like to enjoy something from this franchise. Because again, it's held in such high regard. The idea is interesting to me, like the big robots and stuff. But I don't think, at least with 1 through 4, let's call it, I don't think that's going to be through playing them. So, anyway, you've kind of said the same thing to me about like not clicking with them as games. So, what do you think of what's going on here?
Yeah, and I it's one of those things that where I don't have a specific reason. I mean, I've said in the past repeatedly that I didn't click with Witcher 3, which was the first game in the series that I tried it. 1 and 2 were PC only, and I didn't have a machine that could run it at that time. But 3, and that was strictly based on the combat mechanics. This one I didn't have, this one I don't have a specific reason why it doesn't click with me. It just never clicked with me. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. If a game doesn't click with you, it didn't click with you. As for watching it, I would probably watch like the first two or three cutscenes and see if the story interests you enough to continue on with it.
Yeah, it'd also probably be a shorter way to
Yeah,
experience it, I
much
suppose.
shorter.
Yeah. But with the Netflix stuff, I think I remember them doing, was it a live action film they were doing? Whether or not that actually happens or not, I
There's
don't know.
always stories getting pitched and
Yeah,
things.
yeah.
'Cause I remember a good 4 years ago, somebody was shopping around a Booster Gold movie. Booster Gold
Yeah,
is a
yeah.
DC character from the future.
Yeah. Was that for the DCEU? The old stuff? I think it
It
was.
was 2021, so it would have been in the EU,
Yeah.
the DCEU, but they were just shopping around the script and not seriously because somebody that I was following at the time, had that kind of money to deal with that kind of stuff. And they were only shopping the script around for 100 grand. So.
I've heard is it Kumail Nanjiani? I've said his name wrong, but most people know who I'm talking about. He was like spoken about for that role. Obviously we have the DCU now, so we'll see. And James Gunn does like his more different obscure characters. So you
Yeah.
know, hence Creature Commandos and Suicide Squad and Peacemaker. So maybe that will happen with that, because I think Kumail's in He's in Intergalactic. We don't know
He's in
how big his
he was
role is.
in Eternals.
Yeah. I remember that. I
Speaking
suppose.
of Gunn, I did finally get to see the Superman movie. The
Okay.
movie itself was okay. The way they wrote Superman was shit.
Yeah, I kind of agree. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So
And the
it
other thing is, I'm not a fan of the retconning for the. Did you ever see Peacemaker on HBO
Only the
Max?
first episode.
At the very end of the episode, they had all the DCEU characters come in
Oh
as a
yeah, I've heard
cameo.
about that. Yeah.
And then they replaced them with the Hawk Girl and Guy
Justice
Gardner,
Gang, yeah,
the
as they're
Justice
called.
Gang, yep.
Yeah. I remember seeing that cameo scene, the first one with the Justice League, as people called it. Even that, I was like, "What are you doing?" I think I did a whole podcast on that for some reason. Yeah. All right, so move on from that. Talk about something that ain't nice or ain't really great. Nobody died in this story, so that's always nice. YouTube and AI, of course, AI has been creeping further into our lives in disturbing ways. We've always, used it for stuff. Video games are made using certain amounts of AI. You have to, use AI for NPCs and things like that, so you can program them and whatever else. There's a few just bullet points to break down here. So it says a YouTube. I don't know. You can kind of file this under rumor mill unless people start picking up on this in the next week or two. Because I'm not sure. It says this is from the BBC. Of course, YouTube is related to gaming, so I thought I'd put it in here. I don't know, like, how many videos this has affected or in what specific way. It's not something I've noticed, but I'll just read out what's here anyway. It says YouTube is secretly using AI to edit people's videos. It says skin is being smoothed or sharpened. Again, I'm not sure if that's if you have animated stuff in your videos or, just people talking, or I'm not sure what context that's in. Features like ears are being altered. YouTube confirmed there's an experiment on shorts to unblur and improve clarity. That one in itself isn't entirely a bad thing, but anyway. And then it says there's currently no way to opt out of this, which reminds me of it still happens now and again, but it was a bit of a warning in the ASMR community, because what you don't want is to be watching a brilliantly made ASMR video and you finish the video, you've probably fallen asleep or whatever, which is what I do, and then be blasted with a non-optional ad at the end, which will then nastily wake you up. There was actually a few ASMR artists that I follow that when they were doing that more, because it still happens now and again, when they were doing that, these ASMR artists would have like a 5 minute section at the end, just being like, "Hey, I don't want to wake you up, but like this thing's gonna happen, so I'm gonna just do some more ASMR stuff for like 5 minutes, just to make you aware of like what's coming up, so that you can mute your thing or whatever," which almost kind of like ruined some of those videos. But anyway, I remember that being kind of a thing. YouTube is a bit like, I swear, with ads, you used to be able to pick where they went, and now they just get smacked in like at any point in the video. And they also have, I've noticed with like, I don't know what they deem as a long video, let's say like 30 minutes or more, and they go, "Hey, here's a 55-second ad. We're going to give you a longer ad break, but fewer of them and make them longer." That's not how that works. They give you still like almost the same amount of ad breaks, and they're all like 55 seconds. Which I find annoying. Anyway, that's the ad stuff with YouTube. Yeah, I only saw this today, like a few hours before we started recording. I thought I'd take a screenshot and talk about it. Again, AI can be useful in certain ways. If you took AI away, it would we would not benefit from that. It would be a poor thing to do. But and there's so much like AI political stuff on Twitter and things like that that I've noticed, like people making up clearly AI generated images of like politicians doing certain things and all that kind of stuff. It's because although this has gotten what stronger in the last year, 2 years, this sort of AI fascination that people have, which is to use it in certain ways, it's when you start slipping things into videos and slipping things into content of like, oh, a little bit of this here, a little bit of this there, and then you sort of start. You just gradually rise it up and up. Again, personally, I haven't noticed this in videos. Like I've come across YouTube videos where you can tell there's AI stuff in there, like because I've noticed with certain whether it's AI videos or photos, like skin itself does look kind of sometimes it looks right really really weird, but sometimes you can tell like okay, that's not what a person's, and obviously people's skin can look different in different ways depending on who they are and what they've got. But there's like an almost unnatural sort of glossiness to it that I've noticed in certain things. The only one I don't necessarily have a problem with, because it could be helpful. Again, there's a fine line between like, oh, we can drop this little AI feature in this just to smooth this thing out, make it look better, but then if you take it too far, it kind of it can very quickly start making things look weird, which is where it just irks me slightly. But the unblurring thing on shorts, because I do notice a couple of shorts where, like, especially if someone like moves away from a camera at the start and you get like the autofocus thing that people have got, that could help with that a little bit. But again, you've got to be careful on like the fine lines that we use in the world of like AI content. But yeah, it's a bit of a slippery slope, and I don't like how slippery that slope is getting, if that makes sense. What do you think of this YouTube story here?
Well, YouTube already does use AI for compliance. They have the AI scan the words or listen to the words you say in your video and listen for words they don't allow. And the annoying thing is a lot of the words they don't allow aren't like bad words, not like swearing or, offensive things like that. They just say, it's like you have to say, you can't say single mom in some YouTube videos, which is really, really weird.
Huh?
Because, you talk about dating stories. Some channels get flagged if you say feminist. I'm not even joking on that. I've had people that I know that work for YouTubers that they have to say effinist now, because they can't say feminist in their videos. And so they do weird shit like that all the time. And not the good kind of weird shit, the bad kind. As for the editing, I would see it in a heartbeat because they already do that. Not with AI, but they already do that with like syndicated TV shows. So if you're watching reruns like Friends or How I Met Your Mother or something like that, they will literally clip out 10 seconds here, 10 seconds there, do that 4 or 5 times to where it doesn't really affect the story, but they're reducing the amount of view time from the actual episode so that they can add more commercials into it. And they will all, and something you don't see until you see it, but they will have like posters and books and whatever for set dressing, but they'll actually be green screen so that after the fact, when it hits circulation, syndication, they can sell commercials within that. And then they just have to AI CGI the commercials for like the posters. So, let's say you're watching a rerun of Friends, but on the wall there's a poster for a movie that comes out next month. Something like that. And they've been doing that for at least 10 years that I know of.
I don't find myself watching like episodes of TV on YouTube, so I've not noticed that personally. Usually it's just like people talking or trailers or music or that sort of stuff. But yeah, just let's all be careful of this slippery slope because it's getting slipperier and more things are just, again, it's not always like this massive thing's been implemented. It's like this little bit here, this little bit there, and like you said with I can't remember any personal examples that you used, but like when you mentioned about if you clip bits out and then slip ads in, that's little ways of just, again, getting these little bits of ad revenue and sneaky ads and stuff in there. So, yeah, let's. I mean, there's not a lot all of us can do about this apart from call out certain stuff and whatever. But yeah, I also just to go back to the subject I mentioned. It's just funny. Obviously, we live in a very heated political era, whether it's America or UK or obviously what's going on around the world. But like, when someone's trying to make a political point and the photo they have is like a politician doing something that didn't happen because they're using a made up AI image of that politician doing a certain thing. It's like, if you have to do that to make a political point, then you've kind of made your own point like mute. Like I saw this kind of, it almost made me laugh the other day. I saw this AI video the other day. It was very, very short, and there's this thing going on in the UK at the moment where people are like painting flags on like British English flags on roundabouts and putting up more British flags because that's, I mean, it's all right, but it's not like they're seeing it as like a patriotic British act or whatever because reasons. And I saw this account saying like Britain is protecting the children and it's going to come back roaring. It was some sort of sentence like that. And the actual video, was outside this building. I'm not sure what the building was, and there was this lion, this like statue lion kind of thing, because you know, like England's roaring lions, or I guess that's what they are
Yeah,
being called.
Royal Crest.
Or like the three lions on a shirt, England football kind of thing. And there was this young teenage girl. I'm not even sure if she was real in the video, and she goes up to this like lion. I can't remember if she taps it or something, but she sort of looks at it, and then this lion like doesn't turn into a real one. It like the statue wakes up and roars. It's like okay. So the little like silly things like that. It's an interesting time to be alive, that's for sure. Anyway, let's move on from all that. There was a 30-minute video that was put out, very much switching gears here, of Lego Batman, which of course a lot of people were raving about last week. And the more and more I see of this game, the more interestingly impressive it looks. I watched one of Luke Stevens' videos breaking down the game a little bit. He was pointing out, like, crowd density and smaller details in the game, which there's surprisingly a good amount of that. And we mentioned before, and other people have mentioned, that when we first saw, the reveal trailer, it looked like, okay, this looks like a Lego game that is adapted from the Arkham combat. And it literally does look like someone's taken almost beat for beat an Arkham game, put the Lego, fun into it. Like if someone's trying to attack someone with like a skeleton fish or something, little funny things like that. But the combat is basically to say, it's really interesting to watch this sort of these Lego models do this, especially obviously the Batman character himself. Because even though the last Arkham game was, my God, it was actually 10 years ago. The like specific like moves of how he's like dodging and punching and doing, because they had like the counter system when you get the like warning signal on Batman's head, and you'd press triangle and you'd do a cool like counter attack. And most of it, at least to me, most of those are pretty memorable. Like if you showed me a Batman Arkham move like that, most people could probably recognize it because it became quite iconic. He literally is doing that, but it is a, they might have, I can't remember what was the actual full name of this game. It was like the Legacy of the Dark Knight or something like that. They could have just literally called this like Lego Arkham, Batman Arkham or something. And there were a few people online kind of saying like, this is the closest we're gonna get to like a fifth Arkham game. It just, this looks like, I don't know. I certainly didn't expect anything like this to kind of come around. Obviously, if you said, hey, there's going to be another Lego Batman game, I'd say, sure, that makes sense. Batman's very commercial, like we said last week. But just not in this style. And even when you look at the way you're gliding through the city, the way you're doing the like grapples on, lampposts and the buildings and stuff, and then you could do, don't know how many of you remember, but you could do like a grapple to the building, and then you could like boost off that into a glide. You can do the same thing in this game. It just looks really, really good so far, and really, really fascinating. Again, when it comes to doing, the cutscenes, the stories, things like that, I think it's going to be more Lego-fied in that way. Like it's going to have the Lego DNA. I don't think you're going to get the same like serious Arkham DNA from that, but I think that's okay. Of course, important to remember that one of the points of this game is to kind of go through the eras of Batman, like they did in the Lego Skywalker Saga games, which is very cool. I wonder if you're even going to have, I don't know if you remember seeing it, because I don't think you played the game, on Lego Skywalker Saga, where you'd have the nine films, and in the main menu of the game, obviously apart from things like settings or picking a game, you could flick in, there's like, I think they were in like a circle, and you could like spin it around to pick from the three trilogies. And it had like little animations from scenes like from the films and stuff. I wonder if you're even gonna do that, and you'd start off with like Batman, is it 89, 90? Batman 89, or maybe even the Adam West stuff first, because that was obviously was before that. And then you just go through them all until you get to probably I imagine Pattinson's Batman would be the newest one, because Batman 2 is not gonna be out by the time this comes out. So if you end up doing that, so you go through like the Affleck stuff, the Bale stuff, that'd be very cool. And if that is exactly how this game plays out, I think it's going to be very, very interesting to go through. I don't know if you saw, I didn't see the whole thing, the whole 30 minutes, which obviously a lot of gameplay to watch. But again, I saw more people talking about it, more people being kind of impressed by it, which I am as well. I don't know if you saw any more of this or have any more thoughts.
I have seen a little bit of it. It does look really cute. Sorry about that. Something updated on my computer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it does look really cool. It's not a game I play again, but that's because of the grinding aspect of it, how much time you have to put into it to do that. So it's not a game that I would play, so. But that's nothing against the game itself. It's actually, like you said, it has a lot of personality for it being Lego. But I said the same thing when they came out with a Lego Horizon. Said the characters had a lot of personality in that too. Sorry about that. Windows is being Windows. But yeah, I mean, really. It's a fun game, and people are going to play it, and kids are going to enjoy it, especially the ones that are probably too young to play the Arkham games.
It's a good entry point for like exploring more Batman content, I suppose. So, and yeah, I imagine there'll be a bunch of suits to unlock, with all that kind of stuff and with different characters. So, should be cool. All right, that's all my stuff this week. How about you?
Well, weirdly, a lot of my stuff coincides with a lot of your stuff. You were talking about Sony and Halo and Bungie and all them. Well, today is August 26th is when the Helldivers 2 launches on Xbox, and because I don't know if it's somebody at Microsoft or somebody at Arrowhead or probably both, they realize, hey, we want to cater to the fans, not crap all over them. They made a Halo ODST, what they call a War Bond, which is a collection of armor and skins for your character. Now, obviously, in the Halo universe, ODST stands for Orbital Drop Shock Troopers, but in the game, it's
I
the
did not know that.
obedient democracy support troopers, which keeps in theme with their tongue in cheek of extreme democracy within the game. But it's one of those things that you can really tell they want to really embrace the Halo fans. So you get four weapons. You get the iconic Halo assault rifle, submachine gun, shotgun, and pistol for your use. You get two armors. You get the A9 Helljumper armor. A9 is short for Alpha 9, which was the squad that Nathan Fillion's character Buck leads in the ODST game. You also get the Recon armor, which is very popular among Halo enthusiasts. And you also get a passive armor boost called Feet First. This allows you to make less noise when moving, immune to leg damage, and increases range of discovering points of interest at 30%, which is kind of big. You also get a couple of capes, Halo theme called Honoring Heirlooms and Eye of the Clandestine, which is pretty cool. You also get skins for your vehicles, for the truck you drive around in, the exosuit, the shuttle, and the drop pod. Those all get skins. And then you get a player title called Rookie with the Halo skull on it. So that's really, really cool. And you can tell that this is, hugely popular because this is an Xbox game. So obviously we have no way to track sales and whatnot. But at 7:00 UTC, which I don't know what that is in relation. It's 3 a.m. my time, so that would be 9 a.m. your time. The Steam chart has Helldivers 2 at 27,000 players. At the time of recording, it has the Steam chart at 124,000 players. So almost 100,000 people jumped in to co-op, cross-platform play Helldivers with the Xbox community. And it's not a slow climb either. It goes straight up. It goes UTC 11 to 45,000 to UCT 14 to 114,000. So that is a damn near vertical jump of people jumping into Helldivers 2 to play with the new Xbox players.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I'm kind of enjoying like sitting on the sort of sidelines for it, but enjoying seeing people loving all this Helldivers 2 stuff. It's just kind of nice to see people enjoying it. And yeah, I think doing like a Halo crossover kind of thing here, obviously with the game being on Xbox, that's more, available. Not that they couldn't do that anyway, but obviously partnerships can be partnerships. That seems like a kind of perfect fit. For that,
Definitely a no-brainer.
So, but I also kind of think when it comes to like, let's say like PlayStation enemy characters, or I guess now even Xbox enemy characters, or PC as well, the game is kind of ripe for being able to do that. Like if you put, obviously my mind goes straight towards Last of Us, but if you do like get invaded by a couple of bloaters, couple of clickers, really kind of shove them into the game and make people fight against those. You could also do like, don't know how well it would work, but if you had like a group of like the Fireflies or something in there, and they're like attacking your group or something, or there's some sort of objective of like, something related to that, that would be very cool. You could also do something like, the enemies from Bloodborne or something, or the enemies from any of the Souls games, really, is because really because they're all, I think they're all on available on PlayStation, or like one of the bosses from Lies of P or something. Like if you're one of those with loads of health and you got to take them down as a team. Also, with it being more crossover with Xbox, you could do some Gears of War enemies or some other Halo enemies. Like you got the Locust from Gears of War, so that would be cool. What other enemies could you have? Just anything really, kind of like that. It would be kind of fun to include. I guess it doesn't have to be the enemies either. It could be the hero characters and something has happened or something like that. Because I'm not familiar with like anything you couldn't do in Helldivers that like wouldn't match up with the lore or something. But as far as I understand, it's kind of these enemies are on this planet, and you need to clear it and or do some other like objectives or something. As far as I'm aware, it's just to do with like saving different planets. So, yeah, some ideas that they could do, but it feels like again from again, I think it was 17 games that we read that time where Sony was trying to, and some of them haven't even been properly announced or sort of, revealed yet, but some of them are more obvious, sort of like Horizon Online or God of War Online, however that would work. But there were 17 of them on there that were sort of in development or rumored or already come out or whatever. This is really the only one that's, and it's doing it very, very well. And I think you have a interesting opportunity with this game because I almost think because the way this game is, and again, I don't know the lore of it. I've not played it personally. It seems like a kind of open book for that. Like again, if you look at like a Deathclaw from Fallout, you could put that in the game and you take that down as a team. Or if you do take Horizon, like if you've got one of the big robots from that, you could use different equipment. I always wonder if you could do like different weapons from different games, like. Would it make sense or matter if you've got like Kratos' axe from God of War? There's loads of different opportunities that you could do in this game, depending on where exactly they go or what doesn't make sense. But it seems like it's doing incredibly well so far, which is good to see. But I almost kind of as well. Okay, sure, you could put out a Last of Us Online, you could put out a Horizon Online, you could put out, however, it would work, a God of War Online. You could make another Uncharted online game. There's lots of things that Sony could do, or have like pick four Spider people from the Spider-Man, put Spider Gwen and Miles and Peter or somebody else, and have that as like a four-player co-op Spider-Man thing or something. But I kind of wonder from Sony's perspective, like with the amount of things you could do with just Helldivers 2, do you actually need any other live service games. I mean, you already have things like, you know, the revenue that COD would make, the revenue that FIFA would make from the online stuff, which is probably quite a lot. Because I really do think Sony should just do what they've realized, which is, okay, don't do 17 of them. That's completely unsustainable, as we've learned. But you only really need like one or two of these types of games. But then also you do have like your third party stuff anyway, where it's, you know, the CODs, the Battlefields, where you're going to be getting revenue. You do still have whatever it's doing, Destiny 2 hanging around doing whatever it's doing. Again, if Marathon comes out, it's a different thing. But Helldivers just feels like the most, and the game's already a success, so just adding more, like, just random cool stuff to it seems to, that makes sense to me anyway. Again, whether those things do or don't work in the game is a different thing. But then even if it doesn't, let's say, canonically make sense to put Kratos' axe in Helldivers, like, that's just a cool thing you could do, right? So, anyway, what do you think of the opportunities that Helldivers 2 has got?
I think it would make the sense if it involved, if the characters from the other game involve space in any way. It's like you were talking about Last of Us. It wouldn't make sense for Joel to all of a sudden don,
sure,
you know, head-to-toe body armor and drop pod into another planet. But if you took, you know, Marcus, while it would be a bit of a stretch, you know, you still got, you know, the high-tech guns and the orbital lasers, it would make a little bit more sense. I'd love to see Warhammer 40K crossover, you know, with Space Marines and, you know, whatnot, going up against, you know, you could add some
cool, yeah,
Nurgles or Zinch in there. You know, maybe something from it's from Blizzard, not World of Warcraft, StarCraft. That's it. Mm-hmm. Brain no worky. You know, something from StarCraft would work really well in that game as a crossover. You know, and you don't have to do a big, big thing about it. You could just make it like a $5, $10 DLC skin purchase to where it doesn't affect the game a whole lot, but you can, you know, do a whole ton of fun of stuff with it, so.
I'm kind of thinking with, like, I know you didn't watch it, but with, like, Season 2, Episode 2 of The Last of Us, when there's the stuff on the mountains and the, like, the infected gets woken up and they turn into, like, two different hordes, and then because you'd obviously have, like, you'd fortify a particular area, let's say, and you'd put mines and other sorts of stuff down, you just have, like, a horde of, like, you throw a bloater in there, you could throw, what's the other one called? I always forget the name of it. But the other big one, it's not actually been in the show, but the one that throws spore pustules at you. You could put like those in, maybe those are throwing that at you, and then you could have some runners in there. And you just have to, like, you know, fortify it for 10 minutes or something. That would be very cool. But again, yeah, like Bloodborne stuff, like there's some big tall enemies in Bloodborne, like the Cleric Beast or something. Because the way I'm looking at it, like, okay, it doesn't matter how big an enemy is. Like, if you had, who's a really tall boss in Lies of P, specifically a tall one? The Watchman, Clock Tower Watchman, when it stands up, is quite tall. You've got, of course, there's the, what's the level 5 boss called? The one in the church area, like, that's got like a tail and it's sort of, you know, spewing stuff out or whatever. But if you have a situation where it's sort of, okay, you've got missiles and grenade launchers and, you know, go crazy with that sort of stuff, and then just kind of defending from all these different things from these different games, then that would be quite cool to do. Could always do, like, you know, Thor from the God of War Ragnarok games. Like, maybe he's really powerful and he's got, like, a really big health bar, but he's shooting lightning or throwing the hammer at you and stuff. So, yeah, there's loads of opportunities. It just depends what they want to do, I suppose. All right, let's move on from that. What else do you want to talk about today?
Well, we're going to circle back to your talks of AI. We had an interesting story, and this is something I mentioned earlier and have mentioned several times on various podcasts, is some people just are completely lacking in any kind of self-awareness, and they heavily abuse Cope. So what this is about is that earlier this month, fantasy writer Mark Lawrence composed a quiz on his blog where it had each person that read, there was eight short stories, about 350-ish words each, and they asked people to rate the story's quality and to guess whether or not they were composed by human or AI. Lawrence writes, quote, "This blog post is a genuine attempt to investigate where things stand with AI writing. It's not beating the drum for or advocating against its use. Four stories were written by AI, and four were, quote, written by well-known and award-winning author." According to Lawrence's recent blog post, the aggregate decision of the 964 voters correctly judged the origin of the three stories, got three others wrong, and couldn't decide on the remaining two. Where the lack of self-awareness comes in and the cope comes in is that, according to the blog post, not only did the votes place the AI stories as the overall top-rated stories, the AI stories on average were rated better than the human stories. And Lawrence tries to cope by saying that the writers, these quote unquote award-winning writers, did not they were used to writing novels, so they don't know how to write short stories, which is massive cope. And shorter outputs are where is where more AI is more likely to succeed in sounding like a human, which is also another massive cope. And I just find this interesting in a gaming sense because, if you ever watched the videos of, hey, AI do this or hey, AI do that, sometimes it gets it good. Most of the times, it's really obvious to tell when something is AI, especially if it's spoken, because you have words that are, the same spelling but completely different in terms of pronunciation. And it never knows which one to do. A good example is like LIVE. Are you going live or is your patient going to live? Things like that. That's really easy to tell, when it's AI and when it's human read.
Yeah, it's interesting with that though. Like, I remember during, I think it was during the writer's strike, which was last year, 2 years ago. I can't
Last
remember.
year.
Yeah, last year, something like that. And one of the things, I don't know how many people actually understand this, but one, obviously, there was a lot of different issues labeled, and it took like, ages to actually deal with. And there was different some things with that. There are genuinely, again, I call them people in suits, executives, whoever, whatever you want to call them, who, because they're so greedy with money, what they would prefer to do is sack, or not pay slash sack, whatever one you want to go with, their writers, and then put basically a bunch of, especially with procedural shows, because obviously there's loads of them in America, and it's kind of like, the thing of the week, and then you just sort of go from there, where you'd put like a bunch of buzzwords. So like if it's a medical drama, you'd put like, surgery, or hospital, or all those different kind of stuff, and then you'd put that into like, I guess, a script. You put a bunch of buzzwords into a script generator, and then that would come out with somewhat of a script. But the catch would be with that, because you wouldn't need a writer to do that. You could just feed it buzzwords from a, like, if you named a show to an executive, they go, right, that contains these 20 buzzwords or so, or words that we would use for a type of show like that. You shove them into that, and obviously this didn't end up happening, which is good. But you'd put that into a script, and then rather than paying somebody, again, that's where you're saving money, to be more greedy and whatever, because that's what they care about, you would then just use that for a show rather than using actual scripts. Now, while that has, I don't know what percentage you say, a percentage chance of being interesting or working, whether it would be good or actually work for TV is a different thing. But the fundamental problem you'd have with that, now, I don't know how much heart per se goes into a lot of these procedural shows, because there is a lot of them, and it does get a bit diluted together. I mean, the only two that I watch is the two 911 shows, one of them which is finished, and those have got like a lot of heart, a lot of human, stories, and there's people dying from accidents in the show because it's a 911 show, and people tragically lose their lives and stuff, and obviously there's emotional reactions to it, which is how that's supposed to work. And then things happen to the main characters, some of those die sometimes, and then it works itself from that. The problem you then have with doing that with an AI script is it wouldn't really be possible to put what I like to call the human touch, the sort of human capacity towards that, to actually come out with something that's got some heart towards it, rather than just let's just spew out this thing so characters can say stuff in an episode to have that for a thing and shove it out on TV. But then the idea being we would save even more money, even though you've probably got more than you know what to do with. By not paying script writers for like, a 22, 23 episode season of TV, and then you'd save yourself a bunch of money. You'd put out a worse quality product, at least that's the high chance of that, but then the idea is that you'd save money. Luckily, that fortunately didn't happen. And again, there are shows out there, and there are films out there, and there are games out there that aren't written well for various different reasons. Of course, we've all come across those. But yeah, and that's one where it's sort of, because I voice we should all be voicing concerns about AI in a certain way, but when you start doing in it a way of, because AI can be used to help some people in certain jobs. Again, I'm not saying AI is something that we should get rid of, because that's not the answer. There needs to be a balance. But when it's a case of like, okay, we're literally gonna fire these writers, however many of them there are, or fire these certain people because we can program and use AI to just replace you, is a very dangerous thing, because then you start putting people out of work who maybe don't deserve it, if they're doing a good job at their work. But then it's simply a case of a money saving exercise. There's also other fields of work where I've seen that be a potential thing as well. Like I've read stuff about like coders possibly being replaced, so that you could just plug an AI thing in and make it come up with the code to work a certain thing. Not necessarily a game or whatever, but like for an app or something like that. To do that sort of thing. So yeah, the story is interesting to me in a certain way, but I guess if you were to say to me like, okay, do you think if you took one of the worst writers from like something I've seen, do I think an AI could come up with a better script? I'm not saying that percentage possibility is zero. I'll give you an example actually. So I've been watching the YouTube channel called Real Rejects. They're just a cool bunch of people, and I'm watching like certain horror films I haven't seen with them, and that's just been a fun thing to do. I watched was his name Greg, I think it was, and Roxy. They watched The Human Centipede, which I've heard about over the years, and I thought, okay, this would be a more interesting way to watch this film. The film itself is very, very empty and just not very good. Like there's an idea there of what the human centipede is, and you've got essentially this mindless mad doctor, if you want to call him a doctor, who has come up with this idea. He kidnaps three people and puts them into a human centipede. Now there's no heart in the story. There's no like, you'd think that there might be human themes in there because of what the story is literally containing, things about doing things to humans. But it's like it's a very, very empty film. Now I had a better time watching it because I watched it with two people that like, made it more entertaining. But that's one that would be interesting of like, if you gave a script certain buzzwords to do with the themes that could have been in there but weren't, it's a very empty film. The things that could have been in there but weren't, and using horror buzzwords and escape based stuff and that sort of thing. I would be at least curious to see what that would come up with, and if that would make. Again, the film's not specifically badly made, it's just got nothing really in it. So, but if you made, an AI script for it which just had more in it, again, the bar for that to me is quite low. What that was like, I'd be at least curious about that, but again, we just have to be very careful with what we do with AI. I know it's a very long answer, but that's my thoughts on that. What do you think?
I think the reason why so many people are going to AI is because the writers they hire are just terrible. It's like you can sign so many movies to where there's, you don't want to say it was written by AI because it was terrible, but it was clearly written by somebody that doesn't know how to write a coherent story.
Or didn't bother to
28
do it
years
well or
later,
whatever. Yeah.
yeah, 28 years later, I recently watched that, and that was terrible. The there's another Tron movie coming out, which the second one was not terrible in the sense it was bad writing, but it was written by somebody who clearly didn't understand the source material. They basically turned Jeff Bridges' character, who is kind of a too smart for his own good kind of computer hacker, to where he was half Obi-Wan Kenobi and half the Big Lebowski. In fact, when that movie came out and people started watching it, they were calling him Obi-Wan Lebowski. Because he'd either sit and meditate or say dude a lot. Which begs the question, how does somebody trapped in a digital landscape since 1983 know that dude is a common vernacular now?
Why didn't you like 28 years later?
Because they did so much stupid stuff that, you know how it's kind of the running joke. There was a commercial for, I want to say car insurance, but I don't think it's right, where they're in a fake horror movie, and
Okay.
somebody's like, "Let's go hide behind these, let's go hide behind the wall with all the bear traps on them," and then somebody says, "No, let's go hide behind this wall that's covered in whatever." And then one person says, "Why don't we just get in the running car?" And they're like, "You're stupid for this, trying to escape the killer. Let's get into the running car. You're stupid." And then somebody says, "Oh, let's get behind the wall of chainsaws. Yeah, that's a good idea." It's kind of that level of stupid. It's like they're in Britain and they're quarantined, and somebody comes in because they're shipwrecked, and it's a soldier, and he's got, automatic rifle and guns and whatnot, and then a pregnant zombie comes in, and instead of immediately wasting it, they let the main character talk the soldier out of wasting the zombie because the zombie is pregnant, and then the zombie gives birth, and the baby's not a zombie baby, it's a normal baby, and this guy's constantly yelling, "Let me kill the zombie," and then the zombie comes out of nowhere and kills him. But, and we're supposed to be okay with that. And then the ending is just, I don't know if they were dropped on their head or if they were on some really hallucinogenic drugs. I won't spoil it for anybody that wants to watch it. I'll tell you afterwards when we're done recording. It's that level of stupid.
Ending was certainly a very different part of the film. I know a lot of people have pointed that out as well.
Are you familiar with the ending?
Yeah, I've seen the film. Yeah.
Oh, well, then you know the ending. You
Yeah,
know
yeah.
how utterly disconnected from reality that ending was.
It's a very interesting ending, certainly. Sets up the sequel, so which I think we're supposed to get in January. What were we talking about in the first place?
AI.
AI, yeah. And I gave my whole speech about that and stuff. Cool. All right, what else do you want to talk about today?
Well, Ubisoft hasn't been in the news for a while, so we needed to change that. Back in June, three former executives, former CCO Serge Hascoët, former Vice President of Editorial and Creative Services Thomas François, and former game designer Guillaume Petreau, which I know I'm butchering those names, I apologize, were given suspended prison sentences and fines for a range of crimes while they were in those positions of power at Ubisoft. As being reported by French news service BFM TV, Ubisoft has now received a subpoena instructing Guillaume to the CEO of Ubisoft to be in court on October 1st in connection with the same trial. The subpoena was filed by the, I'm not even going to try to do that, Solidaire Informatics Union and four other individuals. Which was the same group of people involved in the previous trial. Ubisoft released a statement saying they would be cooperating with the court, but it believed it had already been decided that neither Ubisoft or its management had a case to answer for. So they're bringing in the big dog for a quick talkie talk. He's saying, that's all been settled. Go away.
Interesting. Yeah, Ubisoft's in a fascinating situation. Obviously, we bought them up for various different things. It's interesting though, they did participate towards actually, I'm obviously not going to say what bots they put in, but did put a few Astrobots in the old Astrobot, which was nice. Could still put a few more in, but whatever. But yeah, it's interesting, you know. Maybe like a month ago, 6 weeks ago, we were talking about Ubisoft for something, and I think I was talking about their IP or something like that, because I always look at that as a way of, okay, if you're in a bit of a pickle and you're a video game studio or you're a studio that makes things, have a look at your IP and see what you can make to kind of, create excitement or interest from people based on like picking one of your well-beloved IP and, doing something good with it, like a Rayman or a Splinter Cell or something like that, or getting Assassin's Creed back to some sense of reality. And they do still have the opportunities to do that. But yeah, I remember when you kind of said to me about like if Ubisoft's even going to be around in a couple of years, which I didn't agree or disagree with you necessarily. I think it was like, okay, it's a worthwhile, interesting point. It depends what happens in the future. But the more and more we do talk about these things that are going on with them, and worse the situation seems to kind of get. Yeah, I do wonder, kind of, not even in 5 years, even in like 2 years or something, what Ubisoft kind of looks like. And it's very interesting to me personally, because we've got, of course, Metal Gear Solid Delta coming out, which is the remake of the third one, which looks very good so far. I don't know if I would definitively say that Konami has woken up yet, because that's something that I'm keeping an eye on for a particular podcast I might do, because I want to see how Metal Gear Solid does when it actually comes out, and then to keep an eye on. I think it's Silent Hill F is the next game, not one I'm personally interested in, but just to see how it does and how it gets perceived, because to me at the moment, and like, if a version of me now had gone back in the past, let's say 3 to 5 years ago, and said like Konami's going to be more awake than Ubisoft. Again, whether Konami's completely awake, completely like back, or whatever that would mean, or what Ubisoft is going to do next, because they both have, I assume, cards to play. But because I'm just kind of comparing video game companies that are on the rocks a bit at the moment. I mean, Activision's another one. Obviously, EA's got their stuff to deal with. But then, at least with EA, like Battlefield 6 looks like it's doing good. That might do some good stuff, if for those of you who can log on to the game. But like, again, that was one that we looked at for EA, where it was sort of, okay, COD's there. COD needs, a punch to be sort of woken up. That looks like that. They might throw a few punches and see what that kind of looks like. So there's at least something interesting going on there. And then with Konami, they got, okay, beloved Metal Gear coming back. Silent Hill F looks interesting to some people. So there's, again, something. To me, it's about kind of, no matter what point you are as a company, and obviously Ubisoft is not at a very good point, what do they have that they're sort of. Because again, EA, there's the Battlefield stuff. I know EAFC 26 is going to come out, but that's going to be kind of run of the mill, same thing as usual. But again, with EA, it's like, okay, Battlefield 6, that's going to wake something up. With Konami, it's at the moment Metal Gear, we'll see how it does. Silent Hill F, see how that does. That's something to grab onto. But when you do look at Ubisoft, it's like, okay, what? Because I can't even remember or name any games they've got coming up. I mean, I know we kind of spoke last week about another weird looking Prince of Persia reboot. That seems to be something that they're doing, which is again weird, because I'm sitting here talking about these three companies and talking about like, you might not be in a great state, but can you release something or put something out that like grasps some excitement? That's the point I'm trying to sort of cling on to there. But just thinking about the Prince of Persia stuff, because I can't think of really much else Ubisoft related. You put out a Prince of Persia game last year that people seem to really like, and I think won some awards, and like that's gone, and you're on to your next reboot, which this new reboot doesn't seem to have any like eyes or interest on it at all. In fact, as somebody who still cares about Prince of Persia, the first thing I saw of it was a launch trailer just kind of coming out of nowhere. So, Skull and Bones is, I think, hanging around doing something. For all I know, that game's been silently turned offline and we don't know. But, like, Beyond Good and Evil 2, where the hell is that? Splinter Cell, what the hell are you doing with that? Rayman hasn't been seen for years. So, yeah, it's like, even for a studio that might be in a bit of a legal pickle, which is what you're kind of breaking down, it's like, what is it that they're putting out that's sort of grabbing people's excitement in that way? So that's kind of the angle that I'm looking at it from. Anyway, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that company is cooked. I think it doesn't really matter what, who, or what anybody does. It's going to be gone in 3 to 5 years. What happens to it? Don't know, but yeah.
Mm.
You can't have that many executive levels go to prison and all the shenanigans with how they tried to, you know, pinch off a piece of it, dump all the good IPs, and
put one of their sons in charge or something, wouldn't it?
Put their son in charge.
Yeah.
And then, you know, try to give it a lukewarm, ultra low evaluation to just basically skim off the valuable IPs and then not have issue with it.
But yeah, it's like, if you were even, at least if you were coming out with like a game that's got some excitement around it, that would at least be something. So, because I was just thinking as well, like, it's strange that, like, on the opposite side of things, with like Square Enix and how they had to sell off like some IP and stuff. But that was even weirder because, again, that might be a different financial situation, but it's kind of like you had things like Tomb Raider and like you have the Final Fantasy IP. Like, how do you kind of, and those were like very active. Like, I'm talking about things like, you know, with Rayman, obviously Beyond Good and Evil 2 is wherever it is, and then things like Splinter Cell. Those are IP that people care about that are just inactive, where it's weird with someone like a Square Enix, where it was sort of, they're coming out with, you know, seven, as much as I didn't like Seven Rebirth and there were seven remakes, they came out with those did well or whatever, and then they came out with like Final Fantasy 16, that did relatively well, and then there was always things happening with Tomb Raider, there's like the show that's happening, there's supposed to be another reboot coming out, there was a reboot for that kind of recently, and then they did like the remasters of the games, but even they found themselves in like a weird pickle. So I just think it just like right now, just on the spot, can we name a Ubisoft game, forget the Prince of Persia thing, that doesn't count, that is in development that we're both interested in? Because I can't, even if you take the interest part away, what they've got that's coming out, obviously they'll do another Assassin's Creed something at some point, and they're doing the seasonal content. I don't even really hear that much about like Just Dance these days. So, yeah, it's weird. So anyway, we'll see what comes of all that. What else do you want to talk about today?
The last thing I have to talk about is a fun little rumor. The rumor being initially reported by Windows Central and supposedly confirmed by a couple of the sources is that Forza Horizon 6 is going to be announced at this year's Tokyo Game Show, because the game itself will be taking place in Tokyo.
Cool.
From Windows Central, quote, we've seen official, widely circulated documents strongly suggesting that Forza Horizon 6 is actually planning to be announced during the 2025 Tokyo Game Show this year, an annual gaming-focused conference kicking off in Japan at the end of September. This leak was not confirmed, but reinforced by a Australian import car company that took photographs and then promptly deleted social media posts of people supposedly scanning really obscure Japanese cars for the game. I'm trying to see if they list what cars They posted here. Key cars, KEI. I'm not familiar enough with European and Japan cars. I pulled up an image and it kind of looks like it looks like a box. I mean, it straight up looks like a square. Let me save and send you the image here real quick
Okay.
through chat. There you go. That should be coming through here in a second after it does its thing.
But if that's the case, that it, I mean, it's not a game I'm going to play because I'm not really a Forza person, but that sounds cool and is very interesting. So that would be interesting to see if that does happen. There we go. But sounds like a good idea.
Tokyo Game Show is September 25th to 28th.
Oh,
So if this
yeah.
rumor is true, we won't have to wait long to find out.
Good. So did you say the date for Tokyo Game Show?
September 25th to 28th.
That feels like a long way away, but it isn't really.
It's
So
about a month.
yeah. Yeah, hopefully get that and some other trailers for stuff. See what comes from that. Does Sony usually go to that, or do they? I'm trying to remember if I read them like pulling out of Tokyo Game Show or something. But yeah, the cars for this sound kind of interesting. It sounds like a little bit of a different thing as well, which, you know, fresh ideas are always welcome and cool. So, but usually if you do read something like that, that like someone's scanning something, or that usually lines up with. Okay, well, that's how you get them in the game. So, while you'd still put this on the rumor mill, that does make sense with that kind of thing. But usually, when you hear like something's being scanned or motion captured for this, that, and the other, and there's like a licensing or something, usually it does line up with how that works. So, yeah, that sounds kind of just cool and fresh and interesting. So, what do you think?
Tokyo I think would work really well with the Horizon style series. So we'll just have to see if it's real, and if it is real, watch the gameplay from it.
Certainly. All right, you said that's the last thing you got.
Yep.
Cool. Let's move on to some feedback, some emails. If you'd like to write into the show, of course, more than welcome to do so. By the way, if anybody like feels shy writing in or something, hopefully you don't. So I don't know how else to like encourage people, but if you want to write in, just write in. It's a safe space and all that. Again, whether it's random questions, video game questions, again, let us know what you're playing. If you like what you're playing, are you like me? Are you playing Expedition 33? Because, you know, most people have. In fact, most people played it before I did. So if you like that, write in about that. If you're playing something else, let us know. Have you made any, you know, game purchases recently? Anything like that? Matthew at entertainmenttalk.org, social media, eTalk UK, or Entertainment Talk, and there's information in your show notes. Abed says, I have returned. Welcome back. Have still been joining the podcast. Thank you for that. Says, what awards? I've got two questions. Let's take them one by one. What awards do you think Expedition 33 should take? Well, it depends what it's nominated for, but let's assume everything. especially like soundtrack, you know, acting, story, narrative. They usually do like action adventure ones, don't they? That would be for that. I know it's not a real category, but like satisfaction from hitting a counter, because that's always just amazing. Especially if an enemy's got like a wild five swing kind of. It's just so cool when you kind of like, you know, when you've got an enemy that's like really massive and they're like slamming their fist down, or they're then like swiping you with something, and you just hit like five parries and you get that counter. It's just really, really satisfying. Even still on easy, when they do go easy with you on the timings, it's still just really, really satisfying to do. Hopefully, does get. I mean, I'd expect, because usually it's what, five or six nominations. Usually about five for like actual game of the year. I'd at least expect it to be nominated for that, and then certainly for what's the music categories. I think it's like soundtrack, which. God, I absolutely got to get nominated for that. I listen to that song quite a bit. Yeah, like any sort of like music soundtrack awards, but certainly at least Game of the Year nomination. Most people in like most, you know, Reddit threads, comment section, things like that, are like, okay, I don't get how this wouldn't win game of the year, which I'm in agreement with at the moment. I mean, played South of Midnight. Do I think that's a better game than Expedition 33? They're both different. I do love both of the games anyway. See what Death Stranding 2 is like, because I've not gone over to that yet. I wouldn't expect South of Midnight to get Game of the Year nomination necessarily. It went a bit under the radar. Probably would expect Death Stranding 2 in there next to maybe Metal Gear, depending on how that does. Certainly Expedition 33. Maybe something like, maybe not Mafia. That didn't seem to completely go down that well.
Are you talking about Metal Gear Solid 3 Delta E
Yeah,
that just came out?
Delta remake, yeah.
That is not having a good launch.
Okay.
On the PS5 Pro, it's only hitting 30 frames a second.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, it's and that's across all platforms. I just bring up the Pro because that's supposed to be, the end all be all for PlayStation.
Yeah, the $750 premium experience.
It's like on all benchmarks, it's massively underperforming.
Is it out yet?
Yeah, it's out. The reviews are out. Destin Legarry has a review out. Digital Foundry has a review
Okay,
out.
I'm wondering if any of that is like pre-day one patch or something, because that can happen sometimes. I'm not trying to like defend the game or anything. I'm just wondering, like, okay, is it completely out yet, or what point is it at? So, but yeah. What do you think Expedition 33 should take?
1,000% soundtrack. In
Oh yeah.
fact,
Oh
if you
yeah.
want a fun YouTube rabbit hole to go down, look up people reacting to the song, more specifically like vocal coaches, composers, music directors, people in that genre. They are just geeking out and falling in love with the various songs.
Not even just the main tune, like certain boss music, and even just the more gentler stuff when you're like walking around in the open world bits or whatever.
And what's super wild is not only is this video game the composer's first real big thing that he did, he was also 25 when he started. So,
Damn.
he's super young and just super creative and just knocks it out of the park. Forgive me for being crude here. I 100% believe that Expedition 33 should get Game of the Year, but the cynic in me knows that it won't because Kojima has a game out, and in order for Jeff Keighley to say anything, the first thing he has to do is take Kojima's dick out of his mouth. So more than likely, Death Stranding 2 will win because of Kojima, just because last year Astrobot won Game of the Year because Sony bought and paid for it.
Right. Yeah, we'll see. But yeah, certainly some music stuff. Hopefully, maybe Game of the Year. Unless something else comes out and is really impressive. So, oh yeah, second question. And did either of you see the MGS gameplay? I did see Access Strip. Rob streamed it for the standard 90 minutes, and I didn't. Again, it might be YouTube, it might be whatever else. I didn't personally notice like frame rate issues and things. The one thing I know this is a very basic thing. The one thing I'm really looking forward to with that game is because of I think it was the first, second, and third games. I've never played the. Th I've played and finished one. Didn't finish two because Raiden just annoyed me as a character. I played some of three, but that was like on the PS3, and that was a bit awkward. Because I think I played Metal Gear Solid 1 on the PlayStation Classic, which I know is a weird, weird thing, but I used my the Bluetooth thing that I had, and I was able to put my DualShock 4 in the PlayStation Classic, which made it easier to play. So I think I played and finished that on there, which is a bit different. Haven't played 4. I did play and finish all of 5. It takes the actual shoulder third person gameplay and adapts that into MGS3, which even that in itself I think just makes the whole game a lot better and easier to play, and sort of modernizes the combat and stuff. I do hope that they, because I'm assuming the plan, assuming this sells well and, does well, because I think they're doing three because that's chronologically the first game, because that's a prequel. If you then take the third person action stuff and just apply that to one, because I think four is third person and five is third person. Whether they'll do those games, I don't know. But take that and do that with one and two. I think that solves a lot of those things. So yeah. But have you seen any gameplay from it?
I have seen parts of the Digital Foundry review going over the frame rates, and you do see massive dips. Like they're on pro performance mode, and it's bouncing between 45 and 50 frames. And then on regular mode, it's bouncing between 50 and 55. So, but I mean, it's not doing any better on PC. It's not doing any better on Xbox, so this is not me dunking on Sony in any way. It's just that's what they tested it on. But I've seen other channels, same issues on Xbox, same issues on PC. I'm waiting for the one guy that I do follow for like really in-depth technical PC reviews. He's the one dude I was telling the one time about to where a game was so badly optimized that the CPU temp was hitting like 85 Celsius, which is insane for a CPU temp. But yeah, he hasn't done his review yet. That's the one I'll be interested in, not because I'm going to play it on PC, but that's where you get when you have literally no limitations of hardware and you can like really amp that up to 11. And the only other thing I see is people that are Sony fanboys, they were saying, oh, the PS5 Pro is going to be better than a 4090, and it's chugging hard. It's like on the high end, with the PSSR enabled, it was doing 35 frames.
Hi, Harrison writes in and says, what advice would you give to content creators, and what do you care most about with, I guess, with making content? Is there anything you prioritize and anything you don't care about? I remember when I started out, and I can't remember who it was that said to me about it. They said, like, hey, you should do something more interesting with thumbnails, which I kind of disagreed with the person with. Because even when I look at like certain YouTubers and stuff, obviously that's a prime place for thumbnails and things. I do think some people put like way too much effort into their thumbnails and just put like, because to me your title is more interesting. Like, what are you talking about? Is there like questions you're posing? Is it like a discussion topic, review kind of thing, whatever? I'm more interested in like the title or something, because all I do actually do is pick the most relevant image from Google. Like, type in the name of the thing I'm talking about, type it in on Google, obviously avoid all the AI images, pick the most relevant and best one, size that up to the size I roughly need, and then use that. I don't really, 'cause I remember someone said to me a long time ago that like that will attract more people, but I know content creators that just have like just a photo of their face or a photo of the thing, and they're doing absolutely fine. So that's kind of usually, sometimes that's actually the last thing I maybe go and get is like, oh yeah, I don't have an image of the thing, let's just like grab an image of the character or whatever it is. Like the same, like The Handmaid's Tale, for example, is like, okay, I won't pick any, I don't like picking images that are like, spoilery or something, so I try and avoid those. But just, okay, pick Elizabeth Olsen as June in a standard, just type in Handmaid's Tale. I did type in finale because I wanted like a newer image of the show, and then it was like, okay, people would know who that is if they know what The Handmaid's Tale is and they see a picture of June, so there you go. But then it was important, like, okay, don't just put like Handmaid's Tale review because I'm specifically doing spoilers, so just call it finale spoiler talk because I'm focusing on the final episode. So that context matters more to me than the image I'm looking at. Plus, obviously, with the titles, it's like, okay, which rating am I picking? And if it's an individual episode, which episode is it? Make sure I've got that correct. So yeah, that's kind of what I focus on from that. That would be my general advice anyway. It's like, okay, if you feel the need to, I mean, I don't know how long people spend on images, but if you feel the need to go into Photoshop for ages and like make the best looking thing, while that could work for you individually and do something for you creatively, I don't know if I'd say it's a waste of time, but that's like usually at the bottom of my priority list. Usually it's like, okay, am I sure I want to talk about the thing that I'm talking about? Is it worth talking about it? Like, is it, do I have enough to say about the thing? Because as some of you may have noticed, I don't really do like short podcasts. I mean, the shortest ones I've done is maybe like 20, 30 minutes or something. Because I see people on YouTube and, you know, they can do what they want or whatever. I see people putting out like 6 to 8 minute reviews of something. And if they want to do like a quick, if that's like a quick snappy review of something of like, hey, this is good, this does this, this does that, that's it. But then they do like a longer video. I would rather just put like, rather than doing, because I did used to do, I might bring it back in some way. I did used to do like scripted reviews, which is where I'd write like a really short script. The podcast would be like a minute and a half, but it was almost a summary. Like, you know how I do my social media reviews, which is, hey, I've got like 240 characters or whatever. Just give a brief summary of this thing does this, it's good at doing this, and it does that, and it does that. It gives you a brief summary of like how good or bad I think the thing is. And then the longer discussion of like going through the weeds of something is in the podcast. Because I think if you, let's say it was with a film or something, and it would depend how much in. How much interest I have in talking about it. If you said, right, you've got to make a podcast in 6 minutes, I don't know that I'm really doing that, but that's gonna work. So I tend to put more priority into, again, my own thoughts, straightening out my own thoughts and feelings on something. And if I need, do I need notes just to guide me from one bit to the next, or like note certain things down, so I don't like trail off, even though I know I tend to do that anyway, but whatever. Like, let's say with, I know already, let's say with something as deep as Expedition 33, I'm not doing a 6 minute review of that. I don't even know how you would do a 6 minute review of that game, because it's just, by the time you go like, oh yeah, there's this, then there's this, and then you'd just be rushing through it. You're not gonna really, because places like IGN do that, don't they? Or like GameSpot, where it's sort of an 8-10 minute review of a game. You could maybe do that with like with really short games or something. But something as big and as packed and as expansive as Expedition 33, like if you said, okay, you're gonna do an 8 minute review of that game or not talk about it, I may as well just kind of not talk about it. And that's for the four of you. I know we come here and we talk about what we've been playing for, you know, the first 5, 10, 15 minutes, but that's more of a summary kind of thing of like, hey, I played a few more hours, I'm 6 hours in or so, here's my new bit by bit thoughts. But that's how much time over, you know, 3, 4, maybe 5 weeks. But I genuinely intend to prioritize like, okay, what rating am I giving it? Why? What score? Why? How do I feel about it? What was good? What was bad? Did anything particular stick out? Like a really, really good scene, really good acting. Like to note things like that. Like, I know I bring up things like pacing, structure, and flow at certain points, because that's important to talk about as well. But if you listen to, let's say, my Fantastic Four review, because the flow and the pace and the structure of that film and like what is on screen, there wasn't as much talk about there because it was more of like a simple approach. So that was something I just more briefly talked about. But then it's just figuring out my own brain and what I think of it, and then preparing what I want to say. That's kind of almost like the number one thing, and then the title. And then yeah, thumbnail's just lost. It's like, okay, just grab an image that looks cool, resize it, and post it. So yeah, anyway, what do you think of stuff in that regard?
Well, for content creators, I really go for authenticity. It's like I generally don't care who or what you are in terms of I'm going to judge you on it. What I am going to judge you on is how authentic you are to yourself. It's like I've seen so many content creators that completely change, their viewpoint on this, that, and the other without any really relevant aspect of it to cause that change. It's like one guy I follow went through a really, really nasty divorce, going back to last week's episode about marriage. And prior to the divorce, he had some pretty strong opinions about it. And then after the divorce, he basically 180 flipped on his opinions on it. But it makes sense when you go through that, you get kind of a bit of a different perspective of, oh, all these people saying this, this, and this about divorce, I just went through that. Maybe they're right. So when there's like a major, you know, event that could easily explain why you flipped 180 on something, I don't really hold it against you. But when it's blatantly obvious that you're either clout chasing or click chasing or, you know, whatever, you don't really believe you what you say. You're just trying to grift off of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Those people I tend to avoid. Funny is also a big thing. I mean, you don't have to be cracking jokes 24/7, but if you're... Can you hear me?
Oh, yep, you're back. Yep.
Yeah, I don't know if that was your internet or my internet, but it just went to hell.
Teams just went, nope, no more. Anyway, we're back.
Yep.
You were talking about, like, authenticity.
Yeah, what's the last thing you heard?
Something about, like, authenticity with content creators and that.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously, being funny is definitely a perk. You don't have to be cracking jokes every 5 seconds like you're, you know, rapid-fire comedian on open mic night. But, you know, you can't have the robotic, almost Ben Stein kind of, oh, look, here comes the monster kind of a thing going on, because that just won't hold your attention.
Yeah. Yeah.
Outside of that, I'm really so eclectic with people I follow. There's just no real rhyme or reason about it. One musician I follow is, have you ever seen that setup to where they have like a drum on their back and cymbals on their knees and they're playing like 9 instruments at once standing still?
I've seen things like that, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, there's one person on Twitch that'll stream every now and then doing that, and I'll catch 5-10 minutes of it, because that takes talent. I mean, you have to be super coordinated and super split brain to be able to, you know, associate this arm movement with this cymbal and this leg movement with that drum kick. And I would go cross-eyed trying to do all that. But she has a talent for it, you know, so I'll try to watch that every now and then. I watch game review channels. I watch playthroughs. I'll watch people doing crochet. Yeah, it's literally that all over the place.
Yeah, just in terms of, like, you know, authenticity and things like that, the one thing I will permanently promise everybody, and it's not a difficult thing to promise, is that I'll never lie about my opinion. Whether that's a case of, let's say, a different thing of, I read a rumor, I give an opinion on a rumor, but my opinion on the rumor is still what I feel, but then the thing turns out not to be true, that's like a totally different thing. But there's absolutely no point. I mean, on most opinion, most podcasts, it is me giving an opinion somewhere, because there's, you know, me recapping stuff and reading stuff and things like that. There's absolutely no point in, it doesn't benefit me, doesn't benefit you as the audience, doesn't benefit, you know, any co-hosts I'm with, if I sit here and, whether it's vice versa, whether it's a thing like, I watched a film, didn't like it, but I'm sitting there telling you I did, or, you know, the other way around, there's just no point to that at all. Because then I'm just, yeah, why would I do that for? Which is interesting when I get challenging stuff, let's say with something like Superman, where it's like, okay, there's some stuff in here that I don't necessarily dislike, I just find is genuinely strange, and that's the way I'm going to explain my thoughts on that. There is a few things I like, there's a few things I don't, so it's kind of right in that middle bit. But rather than me trying to, because I notice some people do this, they give things either a 0 out of 10 or a 10 out of 10. It's like, this is either the worst thing they've ever seen or the best thing they've ever seen. It's like, okay, that's just not how that works. So rather than me going to something like Superman and going, okay, there is some stuff I think is interesting or good, then there's some weird, then there's some bad, it's like a mixture of things which makes it interesting to talk about, rather than like rather than ignoring the bad or the weird and just focusing on the good and being like, right, this is really awesome, I really loved it, because that would be a lie, or ignoring the stuff I actually did like, because there's some stuff I did like in that film, and just focusing on the weird and bad and going, okay, this film's just like, this is not very good at all, then that just wouldn't be true. But then you also do get interesting ones where it's like with Jurassic World Rebirth. I went in being like, okay, I really hope this is at least a fun, good time, and better than I hope it will be, because I was kind of burned by the previous film. And it's like with, let's say, the first quarter, the opening, like, 15, 20 minutes, kind of nonsensical, not great, but I acknowledged that part. But then when it came to talking about, like, the set pieces or the, like, interesting deaths and stuff, really enjoyed those parts, so I'll, you know, talk about it. But then I kind of tried to collect all that together and give my opinion in that way. But it's also interesting as well where, like, let's say something like Thunderbolts, for example, where I come away and I'm like, I absolutely love that, it's a must-see, it's a strong must-see, 10 out of 10. But then I do try and sit there and go, okay, is that, like, I'm trying to scan my mind through the film or whatever the thing is, and be like, okay, just to try, and I'll mention it at the time, I'll be like, just to be, I'm saying I'm loving this and giving it loads of praise, which is what I want to do, but then to try to be fair, is like, okay, is there any bits that maybe didn't quite work, or some bits that could have been cut, or, you know, things like that. So that's just, and I think that's just the honest approach to do, is to try to just be, as much as you might really hate something or really love something, if it is one end of the scale or the other, try to think of things at least that are on the other side, to try to have, like, a balanced conversation. So yeah, that's just the way that I go about it.
Yeah, and in concert to that, the only thing that I might do is I might dance around some verbiage, but that's either only because since you are in the UK, I don't know what can or can't be said on a general podcast. So I'm trying not to give you too much work in terms of, oh, I got to edit this out, oh, I got to edit that out. And two, I've had to focus myself to not be the asshole that I used to be. Because have you ever heard the phrase, people that are brutally honest enjoy the brutality more than the honesty?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't enjoy it. I'm just good at it. I am really good at cutting people apart. I've made people cry before with my honesty. And I really have to rein that in, because I'm not trying to be mean, but again, I can just be really damn good at it if I don't hold myself in check. So if you hear me trying to dance around stuff, that's my inner brain saying, hey, don't say that. You don't need to be that mean. But I'm still going to tell you honestly about this and that and the other. I'm just going to try to sugarcoat it a little bit.
Right, right. I mean, as long as you don't come on here and, like, you know, threaten someone or...
Oh, I never
and, you
do
know,
that.
Tweet and say to people to burn down hotels or whatever.
Well, I don't use Twitter. And the only time I've ever on Twitter is if I'm pulling up a tweet from a link. And even then, I'm not even signed in on my computer.
But I mean, it's like... if a developer did something and you go, right, go and burn the house down or something like that, that's like,
okay. I'd never say that. I'm way too lazy for that.
Right. Anyway, Harrison, hopefully that answers your question. And last one, which is the random ones from Beth, says, wow, that was quite the answer to the marriage question. And then her actual questions, again, take them one by one. What drinks do you like and dislike? I dislike on the... There's only really one drink that's hot and one drink that's cold that I dislike, which is coffee. I don't know, there's lots of different types of coffee. And Guinness, I really don't like. I remember the first time I tasted Guinness, and it's just very, very different to the other beers. I know it's like a different type of beer or whatever, but again, still didn't like it. I remember when I was at that pub and it got poured, because I just heard, like, okay, Guinness is a name I recognize. You haven't, and you know when you say, okay, what have you got? And I don't always have everything. I'm like, okay, that's the most recognizable name that I know, so I'm just going to order that. And then they poured it, and then my first impression was like, why is it a different color? And then I tasted it, and it was that was a good few years ago. So that's that one. Other cold drinks, I can't think of one particular. There's ones I just don't really go to, but that's the one I don't specifically like. And then coffee with hot drinks. I like things like hot chocolate. I like tea. Chocolate milkshake's really, really nice. I think it's probably the most, I think I said that before. I think it's the most underrated drink. But yeah, coffee and Guinness are the only two that that I don't that I like will avoid or I'll not have. So, how about you?
There's only really two types of drinks I avoid. One is like the super sugary drinks. So I generally don't drink like the energy drinks like Red Bull or Monster or anything like that. Nothing against them. It's just like the super chemically artificially sweet drinks. They just never really taste. They've always had like a metallic taste to me.
No, I totally get what you mean.
And the other drinks is usually when you have to put an insane amount of effort to do anything with the drink. It's like you can't just drink coffee. It's a half calf, decaf, low, oat milk, whipped foam, rappuccino, frappuccino, Al Pacino, kind of a bullshit. I remember a guy had an old joke. He said, "If in this day and age, if you walk into a Starbucks and order a large black, they'll sell you a T-shirt." So in your vernacular, drinks that you have to faff about a bit just to make them drinkable, don't go for that.
That reminds me of a random scene in Big Bang Theory where it was when Priya was in the show and Leonard was dating her and Penny was at the bar, and then Sheldon didn't like the particular social situation, so he left or whatever, and he went to the bar to like speak to Penny. And he's like, he was doing the classic, "Hey, I have troubles. Can you do the, pour me the drink, wipe down the, the bartender thing, Bob, Bob." And he's like, "Hey, can you make me this?" He's reading out the instructions of like, "Do this and then do," and then she just poured him a shot. But the kind of, I guess, part against that is Sheldon doesn't like alcohol anyway, so he like tried drinking it loads of times and didn't like it. So, that was kind of funny. But yeah, some yeah, it's interesting with like, because I've not had like a lot of cocktails and stuff, but it's funny when I sort of see there's actually this advert at the moment with Sophie Turner. I can't remember what the drink is for, but she there was like three steps. She's like, "Hey, you pour this, a little shot of this." And what makes me laugh with those kind of drinks, it's like they're always in this dinky little glass, and there's like hardly any. I know the idea is like you sit with it and you sip it and that, but it's like there's you just put all this effort into making it, and there's like hardly any of it. So.
There's a great scene in Parks and Rec where they're doing a Red Robin style bachelor party because the one characters are getting married, but he's like us, he's just a super nerd. They're in, the house playing Settlers of Catan, and nobody's really, vibing with it because he's the only one that wants to play Settlers of Catan, but it's his bachelor party. And so all the other guys that are in there have all been married and none of them had bachelor parties. And so he's like, "Okay, well let's spend half an hour doing something that every one of you would have done for your bachelor party." So Aziz Ansari's character, they go to like the super hipster trendy bar, and like one drink was a flash of light, another drink was a foam, kind of like cotton candy, or you call it candy floss, I think. Another was alcohol infused hand lotion, just completely taking the piss out of, pretentious cocktails. And that just reminded me of that.
All right, and the last question and the last piece of the podcast is I guess is aimed at both of us but in different ways. What do you like about your scooter and your car? Obviously you have the car and I have the scooter. I could tell you what I like different on it is, so I have gear one, gear two, gear three, and I never ride in gear one or gear two because they're just too slow. But because when I'm sitting in traffic and I keep it on gear three because I don't want to like take off and accidentally be in gear one and then get bibbed at even more because I'm accidentally going 7 miles an hour instead of 15. I've done that once before where I like press the, because that is the power button, you press it once and it changes gears. And it comes up with one, two, and three, as if that was automatic. So even if I started pulling away in gear one that it would beep and then change to two and then beep change to three. And then because what it does, when I'm in gear three and it locks at full speed, it will beep in a certain way to let me know so I can take my thumb off the throttle and save battery. And then it goes into what's called cruise mode. Is to have that happen on its own, because there's a couple of times where I was like in traffic and I kind of like misjudged the situation a little bit, and because I was in gear three and it sort of the acceleration on it is a little bit fast. Like if I did that and had to quickly stop and I was in gear one, that would be easier to do. I would like some built-in indicators. The ones that I've got that are good, but I've seen other scooters with built-in indicators and it's just a bit easier to use. I mean, I like how sustainable it's been. I've had it for. I've read up that the like life expectancy for them is about 3 years, which sounds pretty good. I'm at least a good year into it, and it's been very, very reliable so far. I do like that, even though they're not shock absorption, which is a little bit frustrating because roads can be bumpy. I do like that they're not poppable tires. Because okay, what would I rather have, a bumpy ride or one where? Okay, I'll ride over the wrong thing and then have to, pop it and replace the whole tire. So I do like that. One mistake I've been making on it recently, and I don't know why, I guess these are just things that happen, is it's much easier to turn, at least I find, especially if you're going in a circle, like round a roundabout, when you lean forward and then lean the scooter to the right, it turns much easier. But for some reason lately, I've been leaning back and turning, and it makes it more difficult. And in the moment, I'm like, "Why are you doing this?" But I guess that's just a human thing that we do sometimes. But it's just nice and simple and easy to use. It's not like terribly difficult, so I like that about it. So yeah, it's reliable. It's got me around lots of places. I've probably saved, a good amount of bus fare and stuff for not getting those. I just wish people weren't so afraid of them. And like when I've gone into a few places where like, oh, it's a fire hazard, I'm like, it's not a fire hazard if it's switched off. Because there was I was riding it today and there was I was coming up to the shops, I was getting my cough stuff that I mentioned earlier, and I went onto the path, started slowing down, and there was this young girl in front of me, it was probably 8, 10 or so, and she gave me like this really fr and I was slowing down, I was actually stopping to get off to go into a shop that she was not near, and like she walked back with she walked like left and right and was walking backwards and really scared as if I was gonna like ramp my speed and run her over. I don't know, but yeah, some people really do give me like some ferocious looks as if I'm gonna just decide to run them over for some reason, which I know people are really dangerous on them, but. It's not the scooter itself, it's the person using them. But sometimes I catch a glance of people looking at me when I'm on it, and they're like, "Are you gonna kill me?" I'm like, "No, I'm just trying to get home." So, and yeah, I know there's some, people have been run over by them, people have been knocked over by them, and there is. But then you can get knocked over by a bike, or someone with a skateboard can bump into you, or, but there seems to be this weird. Like e-bikes are better or safer than scooters, but they're not really. So, I don't know. Anyway, what do you like about your car?
Well, I've always been pretty utilitarian about my car. My first car that I had that I got in 1990, when I was 16, yes, I am that old. I had that car for almost 10 years.
Nice.
I just finally it ran to the point where it couldn't run no more. Recently, I've had a weird rapid switch out of cars through circumstances out my control. I had one car I really loved. It was a great car, very durable. Got completely smoked by a truck. I'll send you the pictures later, but it crushed the car, and but that car was so safe, it was a complete annoyance to me. It's like I literally had a truck towing 12,000 pounds, going 10 miles an hour faster to me, completely crumple my back trunk, a boot as you call it. And I was annoyed at most. Unfortunately, this happened a week before Christmas, and my insurance company gave me almost no time to get a replacement car. I think I had like a week and a half as a rental to find a new car, and they gave me an absolute pittance for the insurance damage. So I had to find the first thing that I could afford, and I got it. And I had to get, it was like $14,000, and I had to put I put 4,000 down, and then took out a 10,000 loan, and I was overpaying on it because the interest rate was 4.5%, which would be a dream these days. So I had that. I almost had it paid off in 2 years on a 5-year loan, and the entire power assisting steering system decided to piss itself and die. So I get it into the mechanic, and they're like, "Yeah, we can fix it. That'll be $5,000."
Jeez.
And I had 1,800 left on the loan, so I was just like, "Nope." And this was at the dealership, so I just traded to the car that I have now, which I already paid off. The thing that I like about it, I say this as a joke, but it's one of those jokes that's not really a joke. I like the heated seats because, for A, in December, when it's 5 degrees below zero and you're freezing your butt off, it's really comfortable. And B, I can use it other times when it's not cold because I have a bad back. And so it's a built-in back heater.
Yeah, I don't have a seat, so
Yeah.
there are a couple of times where
But you're
like
young, you can handle it.
there are a couple of times. There's a particular town that I go to, which let's just say has a lot of traffic lights. And I remember, usually this place takes me 25 minutes to get to, and this ca occasion it took me 45 minutes to get home, and like. What was the weather like at that point? I can't remember what point in the year it was. But there was because I was like actually stand because obviously I was standing in traffic and because whether I like take my feet off and stand up or stand obviously I have to have at least 1 foot down otherwise I'll fall over, and then like my legs they start getting like slightly achy. I was like, okay, this is different. But that was because I was just stuck in traffic and at one particular point there are people that get do get seats for theirs, but it's like, okay, if you're gonna get an e-scooter and then get a seat, you might as well just kind of get an e-bike because like you're sort of halfway there. So yeah. Anyway, all right, that's it for this week's podcast. Thank you all very much for listening. If you would like to cause feedback and all that kind of stuff, mention that already. If you did or didn't like, of course, if you didn't like what you've heard today, let us know why. We like feedback, and if there's something you didn't like in the podcast, let us know and we'll see what we can do about it. But if you did like what you've heard, that's good. You can also tell us why you did like it. But anyway, you can support the rest of our content that you hopefully did like on entertainmenttalk.org and podcast platforms. Entertainment Talk for TV, games, films, Man United podcasts. Upcoming, there will be, of course, the Grimsby game tomorrow, which, whether we do or not, do or don't, because we can't draw that game as a cup game. You can't, like, share the next round. One of us has to knock out the other one. So it'll be Grimsby tomorrow. Just very curious to see how that goes in general and see who he plays and what he does. So that'll be for the Carabao Cup, and of course, we've got a Premier League fixture on Saturday against Burnley. See how that goes as well. I believe there's an international break soon, I'm not sure when, but apparently that's quite soon. And then weapons, I still need to go and see. I am aiming for Friday for that. So just look out for that at some point, and then yeah, another gaming talk and eventually Expedition 33 review. So check that out. And then more podcasts when they happen. So keep your eyes and ears peeled to entertainmenttalk.org and the podcast platforms Entertainment Talk for TV, games, films, Man United podcasts. Check out all of that. If you want to support us in other ways, you can, of course, tell other people about what we do, word of mouth, social media. And if someone mentions a thing we've podcasted on, please tell them about said podcast. Patreon $5, $10 level tiers, ad-free podcast review options, look for that as well. If you'd like to, Geek Town Radio, there's a new episode out today. You can go from here today and get your latest TV and film news. Go and check out that. And you can also go to geektown.co.uk for your TV and your film news posts. That's run by David, of course, over there. And you can also check us out on YouTube, Entertainment Talk Plays. And as Robert mentioned earlier, my 30-minute, not the full 52-minute attempt, but the 30-minute part of it, the attempt on Expedition 33, as well as other videos, are on there for Entertainment Talk Plays on YouTube. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye.